Welcome to the Untangling Web3 podcast. So AI is shaking up the creative world. Some see it as a threat, but others are using it to push the boundaries of music, comedy, and storytelling. Today's guest is at the forefront of that movement. Joining us is Wilonius Hatcher, or King Wilonius, a comedian, musician, coder, and AI innovator who was named one of Time's 100 most influential people in AI. You might know him from BBL Drizzy, the viral AI-generated soul track that had the internet questioning reality, or from his critically acclaimed comedy album, Unserious. Today, we're diving into how AI is transforming creativity, the tools he's using, and what this means for the future of artists and entertainment. If you're a creator wondering how to tap into AI for your own work, you won't want to miss this. Let's get into it. King Wilonius, welcome to Untangling Web3.
Pleasure to be here, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're a tech podcast, so most of the people that we get on here come from the tech background. It's kind of like that's their origin story, and they're trying to disrupt other industries. But you start off as like a writer and a comedian. You have this character arc that comes the other way. It takes you into coding and AI. How the hell did that happen?
Man, you know, just I think the biggest thing for me is just being very curious and just like, I guess my motto is always just like, what if? Like, what if you do this thing? So, like, getting into coding happened very randomly. I remember I watched a video on YouTube. It was like two robots debating the future. Come to find out, I think one of them ended up being Sophia Robot, if I'm not mistaken. But I saw that video, and I was just like, I need to learn how to code. And literally, man, like, I was in Miami at the time. I saw the video on a Thursday. I found this coding boot camp in Miami. It's called WinCode. Called them that Thursday. They did an interview with me on Friday, and then I started coding boot camp on Monday. So, damn, like, super random. And like, at the time I was working on a film, and the people that they were like, what do you mean you're starting a coding boot camp? I was like, I don't know, man. Like, they accepted me. I was like, I'm doing this coding bootcamp. So I just started and didn't know anything about code. Didn't know. I watched maybe like one episode of Mr. Robot and that was it. I didn't know what was happening when, you know, all that code was running around down the screen. But I got in there and I was like super lost, man. Like, you know, just everybody else, you know, wanted to be coders. So they knew a little bit and was able to get through it. And but that going to that boot camp really changed my life because it made me, one, not be intimidated by like software. And then, you know, like the mindset of a coder is just like you have to be able to like problem solve and figure things out. So, you know, they aren't like these challenges are just, you know, things that you overcome, you know, and you just do that by just staying diligent and just being like, okay, let's reiterate. Do we have to go to Stack Overflow? Like, what do we need to do? But yeah, that just gave me that growth mindset of just like, yeah, I can figure this out. Like, I'm gonna just stay, you know, stick to it and it all worked out at the end. So very grateful, man. Like, I appreciate, you know, programmers so much more actually, like, after learning about their world and you know, how much work it actually takes to be a really good coder. So that was like the start of my journey. And
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing, right? Because if you look at starting to code in, you know, just a few years later, right, 2024, 25, it's a whole different world. Like, the AI assistants you now have to learn to code has completely changed the game, has, you know, reduced that barrier to entry. But being, as you said, being a really good coder, being a really good programmer it's not necessarily about knowing all the language and the syntax and all that stuff. It's about the problem solving side of it, right?
Right.
I think that's something that maybe people start to lose when they just go head in and try and learn with, you know, AI tools and things. I'm kind of glad that you learn as kind of me and Alec did before the AI age, right? Because now it's helping us get better.
And also, you know, there's a lot of parallels between like stand-up comedy or comedy writing and coding, you know, just the problem solving.
Really?
To me, like, I look at comedy as just problem solving. Like, that's really what it is. Like, you have like an end goal, and then you take to, it's just really just an equation. You take a premise, you take an attitude, and then you put them together and you try to figure it out to make it this joke work. And then you test it and you're like, wow, this got no laughs. Let me tweak it. And then you test it again. You're like, okay, got a couple more laughs. Like the code isn't where it needs to be yet. And then you just keep tweaking it until you're like, wow, this is actually a pretty decent joke.
Yeah, that's really fascinating that you said that, because it actually seems obvious now you said it, but it didn't quite click in my mind. Yeah, it's 100%. It's kind of mathematical. It's kind of programmatic in a way, right? And, you know, even to the point of testing, right? I've been to plenty of kind of free comedy nights where people are trying out their new material and they're not always great. It's that kind of A-B testing. It's the iteration that you would normally do in the coding process. What is your career, like your day-to-day look like now then, now that you've kind of got red-pilled into the tech world and coding and programming, and you're also still a comedian? Like, what is the balance like for you now?
A lot of meetings, a lot more meetings than I would want to have, you know what I'm saying? I was just like, it's a lot of meetings, man. I was like, geez. But creatively, like, I feel I'm in a really good space because I'm like constantly creating. So it's a lot of, my day really consists of a lot of learning. So I'm on Twitter, YouTube, you know, Discord, WhatsApp groups, like always just trying to find out what the new tools are, because, you know, with AI, you really can't take a day off. And then it's just building. So constantly, you know, making music, making films, generating images in Midjourney, and testing out all the new tools. Like vibe coding is really dope, like a thing now, which I love the name. And then I'm doing a one-man show and about to get on the road. So I'm back now in the streets doing stand-up. So in the last 2 weeks, I've really been outside doing like the comedy stuff. And it's so crazy because like now it's like I go out and I do stand up and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm missing out. Like, is there something that's happening online? Like, am I missing something? Yeah. I've spent so much time with AI, just like staring at my computer. So, you know, with stand up, you can be out 4, 5, 6 hours, maybe more, you know, just hitting the different clubs and whatnot. So, you know, just trying to find that balance, but I'm in a great creative space. I feel the most creative that I've ever been. And partly because of like these AI tools, like, you know, those moments where you might have like these brain farts, or, I mean, I never acknowledged writer's block, but you just feel so empowered because of these tools. It's like, if I think something, I can kind of figure it out, like how to create it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. So like, how do you actually involve AI in like the creative process? Like, Jack was saying about like, if say you were to learn how to code right now, some people are missing that problem solving part of their brain because they haven't had to do that. But how do you think it's working for you right now? Is it like a kind of a holy grail for the creative process? Or is it usually you do the vast majority and that just kind of amplifies your original idea?
Yeah, pretty much just amplifies what I want. So, I mean, I start the day off, like, I normally like journal and just kind of think about things that I want to work on or things that kind of like where I want to be at. And then I reverse engineer it with like ChatGPT. So I'll just be like, or Claude, mostly ChatGPT. I like Claude and the rest of them, but ChatGPT is my baby. So, you know, if I'm kind of playing something out, I'll kind of throw it in ChatGPT and kind of like work through the ideas from there, and it'll give me stuff back. And I'll kind of, you know, look at them like, yeah, this is the direction I want to go in. Then I just keep feeding it information or questions. And then I kind of throw those into like a Google Doc so I can just kind of look at it and kind of organize my thoughts. But I use it, you know, to me, it's just like, it's like the best collaborator, you know, the same way you would, you know, kind of talk to one of your friends, or, you know, try to figure out like, hey, I'm thinking about this idea, like, you know, maybe give me some feedback. I use the AI for that.
And it gets dystopian when you start talking about it like that, right? It's kind of a bit
scary.
Yeah,
I know, man. I know, you know, but it's like, you know, for me, I'm in my head so much. So it's just good to like get the ideas out and kind of look at it on paper. And then I don't have to spend a lot of time like typing things out, so I can get it there quickly. Take this out, cut this, cut that, and then go back and then I mean, you still have to implement everything, you know. So it's not a one-all solution, but it does help you just get a little more clarity as far as like ideas or things that you want to execute on.
I get what you mean. Like, it's kind of, I kind of see it as a personal assistant in a lot of ways. Like, you can just throw a jumble at it and it organizes and expands and outlines and kind of helps in that way. And right. Something you talked about is the kind of looking at different models. And again, this is kind of dystopian, but have you noticed that they kind of each have a different personality? And right. Like, say Claude does things in a certain way, Gemini does things in a certain way. I don't want to human, like, make these kind of seem human, but it kind of is getting that way, the way I describe these things.
Right. Well, then, so then it's like, who do you want to converse with, you know? So I'm like, that's why I was like, I've used ChatGPT so much that I feel like it knows how I want to communicate with it. So that's it. But I think that's where we're probably headed towards, just in our human evolution, you know, because I mean, we're, you know, I look at these movies like a Westworld or like Black Mirror, and you see the things that that are potentially there. And yes, I mean, we're going to be interacting with AI. Like, there's kind of no way. I mean, we already do with Siri and all these other tools and whatnot. So, you know, just we get more versed in building that relationship. So,
have you seen her? I feel like we're getting closer to her as well, which is the scary.
Very much so, man. I remember I there was this one, I can't remember the name of it, but I sent AI platform. I sent it to my friend. And she talked to it, and she was just saying how I really like this AI. It was complimenting me and telling me it made me feel good. And she's like, I know it's AI, but like, it really made me feel good. And I was like, damn, like, that's, you know, it's.
Each their own.
It's scary. And, you know, I think Grok recently, they, you know, the XAI one, they added personalities, and there's like an NSFW one, right? It's a little bit, you know, even scarier down that path that you can choose what you want. But yeah, it's a fascinating time. I think when I think of the impact of AI on society and, you know, creative industries in particular, I actually think there may be no better example and no more interesting example than what happened in, you know, 2024 with the Kendrick and Drake beef, right? Mm. Because this has AI at the center of it. You know, it's not the big story, as everyone probably knows by now, but it did play a part in it, and so did you, right? So right. I think this is, I'd love to hear, you know, we mentioned BBL Drizzy. Can you tell us, you know, what the context is around that, how it fit into this big cultural moment, and then, you know, how was AI involved in that too?
Yeah, so the Drake and Kendrick beef started April 2024. Drake and Kendrick were going back and forth. Before that, Rick Ross and Drake were going back and forth. So Rick Ross was kind of like the pre-card thing on the fight, or the title fight. Yeah. I don't know the proper term in boxing, but
undercard.
So he was like, as Kendrick, I guess, was brewing or contemplating, Rick Ross stepped up and was like, I'm gonna battle Drake. And then so he started dissing Drake. And so he actually came up with the term BBL Drizzy. It was trending one day on Twitter, and I only did it because I went on Twitter because I was taking a break. I was doing the Pika Labs Film Festival, 48-hour film festival that weekend, and I was editing a video, and I was like, funny enough about Drake and Kendrick, but I was like, let me just take a break real quick, like, because I've been editing for hours. I still got about 10 hours left before this contest is done, and I went on Twitter, and I saw BBL Drizzy trending. And then that week, everybody was like talking about UDO. They were like, oh, there's this new AI music model that's out. UDO is amazing. So I was like, all right, let me try it out. And literally BBL Drizzy is like my first song that I made in UDO. Wow. And and it just, the version that went super viral is the second version of it. I made two versions, put out the first one. That one got like a million hits as well. And then 30 minutes later, I put out the second version. But I was like, this one sounds really good too. But I was like, I don't know, I already put out one. I was like, you know what? Who cares? Just AI, like, whatever. Just put it out. Because I wasn't getting like crazy engagement on my Instagram, Twitter at the time. So even putting the songs out, I didn't think that it would do anything. So I put the song out, and then it just started like getting numbers. Like, these numbers started going up and up and up. And then I had to go to Vegas for AI esports tournament with Curious Refuge. And I remember getting on the plane, my phone died, and then I went to sleep, woke up, and turned my phone back on, it was like a million hits, and it was like insane. So, but like in the midst of that whole beef, there was a lot of AI conversations. So Drake used AI to clone his voice, or clone Tupac's voice, and then he rapped as Tupac. And so to me, when Drake did that, I felt like that. I had already dropped BBL Drizzy, but this is before BBL Drizzy went like massively viral with Metro Boomin. But I felt that Drake like opened up. I was like, he's invited me and everybody else into it. So I did a response to that video didn't go viral, but I did a response to Drake as Tupac. Like, I cloned Tupac and it was like, stop using my voice, Drake, and as Tupac. So that was like really funny. But what's interesting, you know, I thought about this maybe towards the end of the beef. Like, Drake has kind of been in the midst of this whole AI conversation. I don't know if you guys remember last year that Drake and Weeknd song that came out. You guys remember that?
Yeah.
And that was like a big thing because it was like, this sounds just like Drake and the Weeknd. And so that happened. Then Metro Boomin took it. He and chopped it up and sped it up. He did exactly what Drake asked him to do because Drake was like, shut your whole ass up and make some drums. And he's like, all right, cool. I'll make some drums. So he took the drum. He took my song, made the first instrumental, and then invited the whole world to come diss Drake. So that made it go massively viral. And then 2 weeks after that, Drake decided that he wanted to rap on the track. So he rapped on the song. So and so that ended up being like the first sampled AI song in music history. So
correct me if I'm wrong, but like, did this take you 30 minutes to make I Saw You Say on one podcast? Is that right?
Yeah, it was about 30 minutes from like making the song, because I wrote the song like super fast. So like, you know, I've been making songs for, I definitely put my 10,000 hours in songwriting, because before I was doing stand-up and I was like making music. So it's crazy because like what I did was what I've always done. It's like, I used to just, anytime something was trending, I would just make a song about it. I put it on my SoundCloud. I got like 200 some songs on my SoundCloud. And I always say it as a joke, but it's also true. If there's about 100 views on a song, probably 99 of them are probably me, like just listen to my own music. I took that, put it up, it took me about maybe 10 minutes to write the actual lyrics, and then, you know, you prompt it. Like I said, it was probably like the first one I prompted, I threw up, and then the second one I just iterated again, and I was like, wow, this sounds amazing. And then making artwork, you know, I had, at that time, I probably generated maybe at least 30,000-40,000 images in Midjourney, so I knew exactly what to prompt. So you take that, put it in, put it all together, take the image, take the song. So the whole process was like super fast, and like, you know, it's, but you hear that all the time sometimes when people like their hit song, they're like, I don't know, man, I just went in the studio drunk and I just I don't know. I just told the producer to throw in a beat, and we thought it was a throwaway song, and it ended up being number one. So I guess I just think that when you don't allow yourself to think too much or filter yourself, like, and you just hit a flow state, you can just, everything just comes out automatically, you know? And sometimes you're just aligned with, I guess, the universe at that moment just chose me to bring, you know, this to the world. And I'm very grateful for that. But yeah, the process didn't take too long. And I've had other hit songs that I made that have been really short as well. But then some of them, like some songs I'm working on for like, you know, a couple of days, maybe a week or so, you know. But the benefit of using the AI tools is just like a lot of the process, you know, you can do it a lot faster. Like I did in September, I released an album in hopes of winning a Grammy. So we had to redo all my AI tracks with like live instruments live singers. I had Omos Keith, who won the Grammy for Frank Ocean's album. He produced it. But going through that process, it made me appreciate musicians, you know, and the musicianship so much more. And it gave me so much empathy and understanding of why a lot of musicians are upset about AI. Because like that process is... It's a long when you're going like instrument by instrument, you're doing all the drums like one by one, you know, it's it's way different than just, you know, jumping in, even using like a Fruity Loops or whatever. Like it just made me,
yeah,
it just made me appreciate that process a lot more, you know. And I'm like,
yeah,
so I don't want to like, you know, ever talk crap or be like, hey, I do this and that, because like we need real musicians, and it does sound a lot different when you actually hear the music.
Sure. That's such an amazing story, and I think that's why I wanted you to tell it, right? Because it perfectly highlights this fine distinction between AI just lowering the barrier to entry and it lowering the kind of time to ship an actually good product, right? Because lowering the barrier to entry just means anyone can spam stuff online. But for you, you know, you mentioned you put in the 10,000 hours in the writing process, in learning how to use the AI tools of Midjourney and stuff. And that's what helped, you know, it helped you ship something amazing that could put you in this cultural moment. But, you know, if someone else tried to do it, if Alec or I tried to do it, we'd fall flat on our faces, right?
Not necessarily. But I thought about this the other day. I was like, I feel like in the very near future, very soon, like I think everybody's going to have their virtual moment. You know, it's like where viral moment in a sense. Where like how TikTok is or Instagram, you know, like literally like every day somebody's going viral on TikTok or on Twitter, everybody or X now, every day somebody's the main character on X. So I think that with these two AI tools, we're going to experience more of that where, wow, you made today, you know, Jack, you made a viral song. And tomorrow, Alec, you made a viral song. And then it's just like, and then I got a viral song. And like, wow, this week, we all went viral this week. It was really insane. Yeah. So
that sounds great. I'm looking forward to that future.
I think we're so close now because the music sounds so good. I mean, I think what's going to set a lot of people apart is just the ones that decide to just go a little bit further. So, you know, right now, VO2 is so good in making videos. Anybody can make an incredible looking AI video that's 5 seconds long, but you know what's going to separate the people that take the extra time is like, let me understand storytelling a little bit more, let me understand you know, graphic or visual design a little bit more, so the title cards pop out a little bit more, and the music behind it, you know, can drive this narrative just a little bit more than somebody that's just like, oh, I'm going to just take some random music off of whatever. So I think the ones that just spend a little bit more time in their craft, it's just going to resonate with people a little bit more. And I think people appreciate it because they're like, you didn't just take, you know, 5 seconds to make this. You put some thought into it. You took some time. Like, you really worked on this. So, you know, when everybody, it's almost like how music is now where, you know, everybody can just make a song off of GarageBand or whatever. Like, we really appreciate the ones that really take their time and you know, just put the time and effort into their craft. So, but we're going to see a lot more just viral moments. I'm pretty sure of that.
Today's episode is sponsored by the VeChain Foundation.
Now, we often talk about how emerging technologies like blockchain have the potential to revolutionize sustainability. And VeChain is at the forefront of this green movement with initiatives like VBetterDAO. Let's take a closer look.
Imagine tracking small actions like recycling at low cost, making them valuable assets. These verified records build a massive collective impact, benefiting people through their own actions. Sound a bit complex, but VeChain made it fun. Explore our apps at VBetter.com.
VeChain's goal is to power a new era of sustainable solutions. So if you've got an app idea or just want to earn rewards for small, sustainable actions every day, go check out vbetterdao.com to find out more. And now, back to the show. I think that aligns with like people shortening kind of attention span as well. It's like everyone's got 10 seconds and 10 seconds is all that people can like focus on these days. So yeah, I think you're definitely right. I think like it kind of aligns with, you heard like the dead internet theory as well, where it's like most of the content online right now is actually AI generated. Mm. And it's going to be like AI is generating content for some AI elsewhere. It's like, what is real anymore? It's kind of scary.
Right.
And but I kind of got a question on this.
Do you
get like, what's been like, have you got much heat, say, from the creative community? Because you're a creative and like a lot of the kind of say like writer strikes and stuff like this was around the idea of AI replacing things that shouldn't necessarily be replaced. Is there like a kind of a heat side as well as the community give you some like stick for this kind of stuff or not?
Yeah, you know, it's I'm glad you asked that, man, because like so AI really, I'm sorry, the writer strike really got me into AI, which is funny enough, because I was doing a writing TV writing fellowship, and I had like a bunch of meetings and meetings set up with like agents and managers, and at the end of our fellowship or whatever. So I had the script that I wrote, like I had like HBO execs looking at it, and I was really excited because I was like, I'm about to break through. And then a writer strike happened. So for the first maybe month of the writer strike, I was just trying like, okay, I'm still trying to write scripts, putting them on my Instagram. But at the time, you know, ChatGPT was out. So I'm spending 8 hours a day messing around with ChatGPT and Midjourney and these tools. And then I just really just kind of made a decision to decide to like lean towards this way. But I was very nervous at first because I was just like, I don't want to get blackballed. And I be in group chats with my friends and whatnot and that are writers and they would just be like, you know, FAI and da da da. But I found that a lot of them that were saying that never used the tools. So I feel like once people start using the tools, then they're like, oh, this is actually kind of dope. And also there's a lot of people that use these tools that don't talk about it. And that's what I found as well. So there's a lot of people that use ChatGPT. Because they don't want to get, you know, they don't want to lose their credibility, you know? So they're just like, oh, you wrote this with using ChatGPT. Has everything you've written been by ChatGPT? So I think that's been, you know, a reason that a lot of people don't embrace it. But as far as me, man, like, I just don't really pay attention to it. Cause like, I'm having so much fun, you know, like messing around with these tools. And I just feel so empowered as an artist. Cause like, you know, when I would have an idea for like a TV script or whatever, like I can actually make a movie trailer and show you instead of doing a pitch deck, I can actually show you and make you know what this movie can potentially feel like. But I've received some hate, you know, I literally just don't pay attention to it. I just kind of just laugh it off. Cause you know, people be like, oh, you're not an artist and this and that. And I'm like, you don't know my journey. You don't know how much time I put into all these different things. But you know, a lot of times there are a lot of trolls and then they're, you know, and I do understand the frustrations of people that think that AI is going to like steal their jobs or whatnot. But I was just like, my stance would be like, man, like to be honest, like if you're making X, Y, and Z, you're doing Avengers, whatever, I'm not hiring you anyway. Like you're not working for me. Like let's be honest. I don't even have the money to pay you.
Like, you'll I'm be fine.
Yeah. So like, you know, I don't know. It's not me. Like you weren't ever gonna work for me anyway. But so but yeah, man, I think whatever you do, if you're having, you know, you're passionate about it and you feel like you're in your purpose, then all those things really don't really matter. And then plus it's so much to do that you don't even have time to like really think about it, you know, in the essence. It's like, oh, okay, they're mad. Well, I don't know. Go make something so you don't be mad anymore.
Yeah, it's good to hear though. Like, I think you constantly see both sides. And I think more and more the side that you're saying or portraying, like early on, it was very much, oh, this is scary, or we don't know what this looks like. What's the future going to be like for these jobs? But I think there's so much to be said for what you've said. And we use AI a lot as well, just to lower the barrier to entry. Like, it really is kind of like a technology that can empower people that previously were unempowered. Like to have to spend 50 grand to say produce a song or set up a company or start a podcast like this, like that's becomes a class issue. It becomes a thing where only rich people can do this kind of stuff. And I think there's so much to be said for the empowering factor that anyone can spend $20 or £20 a month on ChatGPT and become a company and do whatever they want as long as they've got a good idea and are going to back it up.
Cause you still have to do the work. Like you still, it's not like, you know, ChatGPT is not doing all the heavy lifting for you. So, I mean, but it allows you to test really quickly, you know, and see like, okay, was is this good? Is this a good idea? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so I think it's great, man. I think that, you know, like these tools, you know, if used correctly, cause you still have to have the mind to like prompt the right way, you know, and ask the tool the right question. So, you know, you can give somebody all the tools in the world, but if they don't know how to use it or they don't use it properly, you know, then it doesn't even matter. And and the crazy thing is, like, AI is there for everybody. So, like, there's still people that don't use it, which I'm like, how are you not taking advantage of this moment? Like, it's kind of crazy right now. Like, just jump in.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think of you know, the movie industry, and it's I think the fear around jobs, it's like, I think we're going to adapt in the way we do with any technology, right? Like what we can, what you were able to see on the screen for Interstellar was not possible 10, 15 years before it came out, because it needed so much computing power to see these incredible things and render them on screen, right? It allows the bigger players to do even better things. But, you know, as Alex said, it allows the little players to also get involved on a lower budget, because, you know, how are they going to compete with the Marvels of the world, right?
Right.
Another thing I want to kind of loop back to the whole Kendrick and Drake beef, because there was something you mentioned that I think is really interesting in there as well. You talked about how the use of an AI version of Tupac was, you know, a part of a talking point in this, right? So Drake created some verses here that were sung by Tupac, and this became part of the rap battle itself, right? Because at least one or two of the songs that Kendrick came out with, he was, you know, referencing this and saying this is disrespectful to his name and his legacy. And then obviously the estate of Tupac also threatened legal action. I think the song ended up being taken down from Drake as well. So on that, what was your kind of take on that side of things? Because that's maybe something that people are worried about is, okay, can AI start taking my likeness? How does that, you know, what are the ethics involved with that from a creative process? Because you mentioned you did it as well, right? And I think that, but maybe from a comedic standpoint, I think there's a real difference there to what maybe was happening with Drake.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw Drake do it, I was just like, oh man, he pretty much opened up the floodgates, you know, because like I said, the year prior, somebody took Drake's voice. They took Drake's voice, and I don't remember the name of the song. It's like Heart of the City or something like that. But it was taboo then, you know, like it was like, even though people really liked the song and it was like a bunch of reels and it was like everywhere, it was still like, hey man, this isn't cool that you took Drake's voice and using AI. But when Drake did that, him being such a big artist and being so influential, it opened it up for everybody that does that. You know, you're just like, well, how we can do it? Like Drake just took Tupac's voice. So like, we can take everybody's voice now, you know? So that was my first reaction, was just like, oh, he just gave permission to everybody to do this, what he just did. So, my response was just like, just wanted to be funny. And I felt that, you know, I felt my Tupac flow was a little bit better than his, to be honest. Like there was certain like things that Tupac does with his voice. Like, I was like, yeah, you didn't really sound it. But like, I think, that is an interesting thing, because like it's so easy now to clone a voice and, you know, use somebody's likeness and whatnot. So, you know, there should be some type of regulations on that, because, you know, if I want to make a Taylor Swift album, I can do that, be monetized and then whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? So I just think that, there just has to be a way to protect artists. You know, I'm an artist myself, so I would never take the stance that AI should eliminate artists. You know, like we need the original people, and we need them to be, you know, compensated for what they contribute.
Yeah. I think it's often underappreciated, like what they contribute culturally. I think like going like further with this, like a big stepping stone and things that I've started to see is like the ideas of AI agents and AI personalities. And when you basically create something new, an entire entity that is new, what do you think about the idea of like virtual comedians, like AI generated influencers? You see some of them on like Instagram and TikTok these days. Do you think that's going to become mainstream? Like, will people connect with that? Or?
I definitely think you'll see a lot more of that. When I think about that, because like I go to the metaverse sometimes, you go into
What does that mean? What does it mean to go to the metaverse? Like,
like the Oculus, you know, Horizon Worlds, or
nice.
I loved Allspace when that was around. But go in there, and you essentially kind of get lost in essence. You're like, you kind of forget that you're in a virtual world. Like you're with people. You're in the club. You're drinking, which is crazy.
Yeah,
and people are like, yo, you want to buy me a drink? And they're like, yeah, I'll buy you a drink. And you're like, oh, and you're dancing and stuff. It's wild, because they don't even have legs. They're just like a torso and a head. But you feel like you're in this world, you know what I'm saying? So with that environment, you can I don't know, you might eventually feel like if it was somebody that was like straight AI, for example. So like I was at the MIT Reality Hackathon January this year, and we built my team built a virtual reality battle rap app. And what it was is like you go into the Oculus and you rap to a AI avatar, and it raps back to you, and then you rap. It takes what you say, and then so if you're like, hey, your shirt looks like a banana, and whatever, and then it'll be like, oh, my shirt looks like a banana. Well, you look like an avocado. I don't freestyle yeah. really well, but
it's a sanitized version.
Say, and then it raps that just the same way a battle rap. And then obviously, like, it's AI, so it's not amazing, but I would want to interact. Well, once it gets, you know, to a point where it's like really good, I want to interact with it. I talk to my open ChatGPT voice bot all the time. Like, I'm just like, hey, I'm thinking about this. Like, tell me. And then it sounds so conversational that, like, I just enjoy talking with it. So if it's good, if it's really good, I think people would be okay with that, you know, especially like because it's like that movie, like the Avengers Endgame. Remember at the end of Endgame when Thanos was like, he came back, he was like, because you guys remember, I know what I need to do. I gotta eliminate you so you don't remember, because y'all remember the old world. So like a lot of children that are probably growing up, they'll grow up with these AI avatars, so it won't be weird to them. They'll just be like, this is just the way things are. Like, yeah, we talk to AI, like, it is what it is. So, but I see that being more common, man, like probably more hologram concerts and stuff. And, you know, it's once somebody just makes it cool, you know, and they make it work, you're just like, all right, man, it's just what we do. Like, we talk to AI and we interact, like, you know, like the movie Her, and, you know, you're just.
Already Player One. That's the future I'm hoping for.
Right, right. You know, so it's not out the realm of possibility. And like I do it, like I'm not like obsessed with it, but you know, I'll interact with my AI, and you know, so I would never say never. You know, I think this new season of Black Mirror that's coming out next month. this will be very telling. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's also, you know, there's always gonna be people who don't are uninterested in engaging with it, and you know, that's fine for them if they're not going to enjoy it, but yeah, I can probably think of some people who are much more likely to buy you a beer in the metaverse than in real life. So I'm sure they'll probably enjoy it.
And I think that it's going to make IRL experiences go up. Like, people really value that a lot. Like, kind of like now, like after COVID, people are like, yo, I really just want to be around people. I need my community, I need, you know, my tribe. Like, I gotta find my people. Cause like now, like I really, really enjoy conferences or festivals. I go to Burning Man. Like, I just enjoy being around people, you know? And, so, you know, that part, I don't think it'll ever go away, you know, like we need that as humans. Like, we need community.
Yeah. And the more people know that the internet is this dead internet theory potentially, then maybe they'll be like, well, I'm just not going to bother with a lot of that. I'm just going to speak to real human beings like we're doing. Right. Yeah. Listen, it's been such an interesting conversation. I've had a real blast here. Just to finish, I just want to ask you in kind of one or two sentences, what do you see the next big thing in the future of AI in the creative space? Because, you know, we've talked about lots of things we've seen already. What do you think, is there something big on the horizon that's going to come, or is it just kind of going to be an evolution of what we've seen so far?
Yeah, I think the evolution, I mean, obviously the robots are coming.
The robots are coming.
Yeah, the robots are coming, man. So you know, like you go to LA and like they have the self-driving cars. Like, my first time seeing one of those is so trippy, man, because I'm just like, there's nobody in the front seat. And
it's crazy. You don't. I did not get used to it. I was in San Francisco when they first did it with Waymo, and I was there like holding on to everything. It's horrible.
Yeah, so it's just like, oh, you rode in one.
Yeah, I was in one. Man. It was so intense.
I'm not there yet. But, you know, I remember seeing that in, you know, I watch West. I just feel like Westworld and, I mean, a lot of sci-fi movies, we're kind of just like, that's our future reality that we're kind of looking at. But like watching like Westworld, like season 3 of Westworld, and and like Black Mirror, you're just like, okay, this is, these are probably closer to like a lot of the tech that you're seeing in there. The episode with the little dog, robot dog with the laser on it, and the synthetic humans and all that. Like, you're like, we're inching towards that, you know? So will it be as scary as The Matrix, like Terminator? I don't know if we're going to see that like in the next 10 years, but the way AI is evolving, it's I mean, just imagine where we were with like coding and images a year ago. Like around this time, I think Sora dropped last year, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, like look how and now every video model is better than it was, you know, that time. So like, I don't know. I'm probably excited about holograms and robots. I think are going to be, you know, very interesting to see how these things get implemented. And, you know, just the evolution of these AI agents, you know, as they get more advanced, because it's moving fast. And, I mean, the things you can create. I was messing around with Claude before we jumped on this call, and I was just making all these like graphic visual images, visual videos in Claude. And I'm just like, I did a prompt. It's one line, and now I'm coding like I'm a you know, senior level coder. This is kind of insane.
Yeah, it's crazy, and it's fun. You know, it's the video that always reminds you of how fast the pace of changes is when you compare the Will Smith eating spaghetti, you know, every few months, and it just gets better and better. It's crazy. Right. Yeah, I guess watch this space is the take home message. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been real fun. Thank you. And to those listening at home, thank you for listening, and you can join us next time to untangle a little more Web3.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.